Now, what are some of the stories and characters you wrote about that people have told you that they really connect with most in Me Too?
Oh, man. There's a... you know, I guess that's interesting. Because a lot of people have jumped in. No one story has been, you know, hammered on per se that people say, oh yeah, that one right there.
Okay.
It's been really diverse. So okay. There's been a lot of different responses to a lot of different stories because it really hits people where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So one story may to one person, it's like, oh yeah, that's nice. Where mm-hmm. someone else write it and said, oh no, now that story's amazing.
Right.
That's
right.
I can't believe that happened.
But that's kind of the hook, Me Too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just sort of so people read this, and that's where the story came from, or the title came from, was Me Too, is mm-hmm. that idea that we all have these things in common in life. So when I say something that happened to me, and I think, oh, yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tell you that story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started recently working in schools, working a little bit with the book, having what I call Me Too moments.
Okay.
So if I read to a kid, especially kids with learning disabilities like myself, they don't like to write. And the first thing I say, hey, write a story. It's like, well, I don't know, right? They're all going to say, what do I write? Well, I don't know what to write.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just write a story. If I just keep at that, it's like they don't go anywhere. They mm-hmm. go. Matter of fact, it gets worse. Where if I tell them a story,
mm-hmm.
like one of these, or read it to them, and then I say, so, anybody, you know, have anything like that happen to them? Oh, yeah. Oh, really? What? And then they tell me the story.
Okay.
And then I say, write it.
Sure.
You just told me this great story.
Right.
Well, I can't. Yeah. You can just write that story.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing that we know best is ourselves.
Yes.
But we don't all necessarily believe mm-hmm. that these experiences that have happened to us
right.
are valid or are worthy.
Right.
When I think they are.
But once you put them out there, as you have, you find out that people connect with those because
right.
they've had similar experiences and it
right.
Strikes a chord with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to do a lot of children's theater. So I used to go into schools and perform live shows. And I, at times when I would tell my story about my difficulty with reading or writing, you know, I'd have kids just, you know, not hold back and suddenly shoot their arm up and mm-hmm. just yell, oh yeah, me too.
Right.
And just yell
right.
that phrase, me too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something about that, that it's sort of an overwhelming need to connect.
Right.
To not be alone.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not the only one.
Right, right. And we're never the only ones.
No.
There's always
no. Yeah.
some connection.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, do you have stories in it that you like to return to time and time again? And if so, what are those stories?
I don't know. That's a good question. When I've done book signings, I've told people a story that's not in the book.
Okay.
Which is kind of, I don't know, it's like maybe that's weird. I don't know. But I deliberately will tell them a story that's not in the book to say, this is what the stories are like in this book.
Okay.
That one I just told you, mm-hmm. it's not in the book.
Okay. And what is that story?
Well, there's a few different ones, actually, mm-hmm. that I have in my bag that I pull out that just is an illustration of stories that are being that are honest. And mm-hmm. that's the part that was sort of a criteria that had to be met, that these mm-hmm. stories have to be true, number one.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be somewhat vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be emotional,
mm-hmm.
In a variety. They can be funny, but also they tend to also be, you know, meaningful emotion.
Sure.
And, there's got to be a sense of vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of wild that recently on the TED Talks
mm-hmm.
And also in authorship, there's a Brené Brown, I think her name is. She is
okay.
one of the top rated TED Talks in one of her talks. So I think the one that's the biggest, you know, 8 million hits or something is mm-hmm. on vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
That's her talk.
Right.
Her 18-minute talk is vulnerability.
Right.
Which is, and she even actually, she says the phrase in one of her talks, me too.
Mm.
She says the phrase going, yeah, da, 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 and then, yeah, and that is one of those me too.
Yes.
And I was like, right on, girl. That's my title. So, but the, you know, the title is Me Too, Extraordinary Everyday Stories That Connect Us.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to a college class a couple of weeks ago, and some young lady then raised her hand and said, well, but What if your stories aren't extraordinary? I said, well, they're also every day. Oh. I said, I deliberately put extraordinary every day.
Yeah.
Because, your story probably is. You're mm-hmm. thinking it's not.
Right.
That's my point.
But that goes back to the critic that we have
exactly.
within our heads.
Yeah. And she was honestly worried about that. She was really concerned that, well, hey, you know, you have these extraordinary stories. It's like, hey, so do you. You just don't believe it.
But she has to take that step to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And or she, you know, well, I wouldn't tell that story. Well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And what day did it happen? Was it an extraordinary day or was it just one day? Because that's what they all start as.
Mm-hmm.
We wake up. I didn't plan any of these things to happen.
Right.
So one of them, for example, you asked, you know, one that strikes people. A couple of people have mentioned U-turns.
Okay.
So waking up one morning, I had no idea that, well, I figured if someone said, hey, Tim, you plan on being late to the airport? I would have said, yeah, probably, per usual.
Right.
But I'm driving to the airport, and I'm late, and it's raining like crazy, super hard rain, cold spring rain. And I drive by a bus stop, no shelter, just a sign.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman is standing there holding this little baby up against her chest real tight. And another little kid is grabbing her leg, trying to shelter from the rain.
Right.
And I drive by and I just sort of, you know, curse her in a way that's like, wow, how stupid, lady. You know, you're standing out in this pouring rain. You got your kids out here exposed to the elements. You know, why didn't you plan better? You know, what the heck? You know, and through all this judging, finally, a slug in my stomach out of nowhere. I almost puked. I got hit so hard by the spirit, if you will. And it's like, she doesn't need to be judged.
Mm-hmm.
She needs an umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one in the trunk of my car.
Sure.
And I made a U-turn on this four-lane road. I just cranked it, just whipped around, drove back to the nearest, you know, street or I could pull into, and I popped my trunk and I grabbed it and I ran. And I was so ashamed that I write this in the story that I pushed the button and the umbrella just woof.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, wow. I don't remember this umbrella being so big.
Right.
It just seemed huge.
Right.
Where did this come from? And I kept my head down when I handed it to her.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't even look at her
because
I just felt so ashamed. And there was one other woman standing at the bus stop. And all I heard, she didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything. But there was just this gasp of, and I turned and I ran and got back into my car.
Sure.
And I drove on to the airport.
Wow.
For whatever reason, there's been a couple of people who've read that story, and it just really hit them.
Yeah.
As in, I've seen people maybe in that situation, and I thought the same thing, but I didn't do anything.
Right.
So it,
but there's sometimes something simple that you can do. You have an umbrella. You take that umbrella for granted, and she's there with her kids, and the rain is coming down, and that's all it takes.
Yeah. Well, it was the powerful moment for me was the fact that I'm sitting in this dry car, and I'm on my way, and I'm judging her about. I don't know anything about her. I don't know her circumstances.
Right.
She may be really sick and has to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. One of the kids. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know anything.
Right. Right. Right.
All I know is she's standing in a really cold rain, and I'm not doing anything about it except judging her.
Mm-hmm.
And then it hits me. And it really was one of those moments of just of realization. And I don't think about consciously driving down the road, hey, I got an umbrella in my car.
Right,
It just occurred to me.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Because remember at the time I had a Pontiac Bonneville. Remember those SSIE or whatever it was? And I remember it was my first car I ever had where you could open the glove box and there was a button that you could pop the trunk.
Right. That was pretty advanced.
Yeah, it was pretty darn cool. And anyway, I remember I popped the trunk from the inside and I jumped out and I grabbed that umbrella. So that story and then just... You know, and we were talking before here that our show and that I get emails once in a while from people. And it's really some of the stuff that I got a 3-page letter from a social worker who had had surgery and was lying on her back and couldn't do anything. She could do some work, I guess, on the computer, but she read my book and wrote me a 3-page letter about how much she loved it. And then just the other day, I got another email from somebody I don't know, and she wrote a big email. I mean, it would be almost a half a page or more, and really shared some, you know, intimate family background stuff that just, it struck her. But I think that what the point she wanted to make, that the stories helped her to move on.
Well, that's great.
And she said something to the effect of the past doesn't have to equal the future.
Right.
There was something in the stories that connected with her to let go of some stuff that was in the past that she didn't need to hold on to anymore.
What's the main thing that you'd like people to walk away when they finish the last page of Me Too?
I guess that their stories count, that they have true, real, meaningful stories, too, that, maybe could be shared with friends or family that, matter. I think there's also, because I've had people inquire about this, and I like it when they do, is some people have asked, and I think I'd like them to take away, how can I capture more of these moments in my life? How can I recognize these stories? And so I think I'd like people to walk away with saying, you just have to pay attention. You just, and when you think something meaningful just happened, or you witnessed something that was beautiful, or something that was in you that you sort of went, oh, take the time with that. And yeah, if you think maybe it was a big deal, or that was really quite amazing, it probably was. That, yeah, that counts. That's it. Right there, that's part of your, that's part of the journey. That it's nothing down here at the end somewhere. You know, as a hospice volunteer, I discovered that people in the last days, you know, or when they can still be conscious and talk about things, you know, they just talk about friends and families and things that have happened along the journey. But really, in the end, it's just a few moments. That's all we're recalling. And they tend to be, you know, somewhat story oriented. You know, there's just, well, tell me, what was that? What happened? And they tell me what happened. And it's just, that's what we remember. So these are stories, 29 essays that I took mental note. And sometimes then even in my live shows and, you know, when I talk and do speaking engagements, some of these I share. Some are appropriate, some aren't. It depends on what the talk is. So, and people really, you know, the response usually to my live programs, I think to the book as well, is just, oh, it's just real. It's like, nothing fake, not making anything up.
Now, you obviously, you know, you talked about all the stories that you wrote, and it sounds like some of those did not make it into the book. Do you have plans to do a second book?
Yeah, there's almost a half of another one done. So, because this one ended up being almost 200 pages, and there was almost 300 and some pages of the book done. I just didn't want it to be that big, because one thing people say about the book is like, I love it because I can finish it. The stories are anywhere from a page to 3 or 4 pages long, so they're relatively short. And I think there's a sense of a mission accomplished, that when you have a book and you actually read the whole book cover to cover. Because statistically, I want to say it's a big number, 80%, especially people like myself, speaker people, you know, sell their books in the back of the room. 80, 90% of people don't read half past halfway of a typical speaker's book. That's not my goal in this. This, my goal is if you start reading a couple of these, you want to read all of them. I want them. I want them to read the entire book cover to cover. Because also, if they get to the back cover, then they see my promo page.
There you go. Now,
hey, he's got a website. Sweet.
Know, these days, you know, you wear a number of hats in addition to being an author. You're also a speaker, actor. You do improv. What led you down those paths?
I probably, the beginning was college when I joined a children's theater troupe.
Okay.
And we were a considered what would be, you know, a professional children's theater troupe. So we were paid to do children's theater, but we traveled all over West Michigan, but also the Midwest and all over the United States.
Okay.
And we actually did a tour, did a couple, but one of them was there's a famous children's author by the name of Tommy DePaula.
Okay.
Caldecott Award, multiple Caldecott Award winner and you know, famous dude and illustrator and author. And he gave us permission to perform his stories, his books, which was a big deal. And we toured it all over the country, New York to L.A. kind of thing. And that got me on stage, got me working, you know, in theater and performing. So that would be the entry to the entertainment world, I guess. And then in that, while studying that, you know, we did improv, we did story theater, we did, you know, miming, we did really a lot of a big variety of the performing arts. So I sort of got my chops doing that stuff. That got me into it.
Now, folks who want to find out more about you, find out more about the book, where can they go?
Yeah, so a great start is just timcusack.com. So TimCusack.com. So timcusack.com. And all my info, email, and numbers, and you can buy the book at my website, or you can go to Amazon. Amazon has the book, and the audiobook should be out next week.
Now, are you doing the...
I read the book, so it was hard for me to read my own book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, seriously. Because I'm still, even though I do voice work, once in a while you might hear my voice on radio commercials.
Absolutely.
30-second or 60-second radio spots. I have to read those things over, you know, 5-10 times before I record, because I'm not a good reader. I don't read well out loud well.
But do you experience the stories differently when you read them versus when you wrote them?
Yes. Yes. There were some changes I wanted to make.
Oh, okay.
When I read them out loud, I'm like, you know, that doesn't flow quite like I'd like it to.
Okay.
I mean, that's really, and there's theories behind that where people, when you write something before you send it, you should always read it out loud.
Okay.
Because you hear it, obviously, you are hearing it differently through your auditory system from the exterior than you are interior in your brain. So it is a good idea to read everything out loud.
I
probably should have done that. Well, I did. I mean, I read the thing over 100 times, you know, while writing it, but it's still just different reading it out loud.
Right.
But not many changes. I mean, and I had, you know, my first printing of 1,000 books, there was, I don't know, maybe one or two typos. That's it for 200 pages.
Okay.
Which is pretty good. Even though I had people proofing it, they still just missed the things. And then, so, yeah, the audiobook will come out. And
fantastic.
That'll be cool. Yeah.
This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I've been joined by Tim Cusack. He's an author, actor, speaker. He's just released the book, Me Too, and you can also check him out online at timcusack.com. Thanks so much for joining me, Tim.
Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it.